I'd like to call the Lane County Animal Service Advisory Committee meeting to order for Monday, January 14th, 2009. We have four members, which constitute a quorum. And we could introduce the staff, Ms. Betty and Rachel. Mm-hmm. Rochelle?
Rachel.
Rachel.
Yes.
Sorry. Rachel. And appreciate your good work. Now we have three speakers, the Honorable Jerry Ritter.
Yeah, boy.
The prolific letter writer to the Register Guard.
Guilty as charged, but no more than blacklisted me.
But we'd like to hear from you, Jerry.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Jerry Ritter, I live at 1865 Yolanda in the North Springfield UGD. And I'd like to propose an amendment to the Lane County Nuisance Animal Code, Chapter 7, Section 115, and specifically to add language to that code coming from the Multnomah County Nuisance Animal Ordinance. And the purpose is to bring the Lane County ordinance in alignment with Multnomah County, and also to provide citizens with additional recourse to deal with nuisance animals, and specifically barking dogs, which I've had to deal with in my neighborhood for over 40 years. Part of the problem with the existing ordinance, and I'll read it for you, an owner who fails to control any animal that causes annoyance, alarm, noise disturbances for more than 15 minutes at any time of day or night, be it repeated barking, whining, screeching, howling, braying, or other like sounds which can be heard beyond the boundary of the property, commits a Class C violation. What I'd like to add to that is from Multnomah County, which Multnomah County gives it 10 minutes continuous or repeated episodes of intermittent noise lasting for a minimum period of 30 minutes. I'd like to add that clause to the Lane County language. And part of the problem is that the word continuous is open to interpretation. Like so many of the things I deal with in legislation, there may be a word or a phrase that can be interpreted a number of different ways. So my goal here is to give citizens a bit more robust means for recourse to deal with, unfortunately, there are inconsiderate folks out there to deal with these things. I've already run this by the county commission. They were receptive, but they suggested that I run it by you folks to hopefully get your blessing. And I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Well, I have one. On the Multnomah County ordinance, there's a final sentence that seems to make some sense and be balancing, which says, and I noticed you omitted that from your proposed amendment where you imported something from Multnomah County, and that sentence says, it shall be an affirmative defense under this subsection that the animal was intentionally provoked by a party other than the owner to make such noise. Mm-hmm. You'd be comfortable by adding that, wouldn't you?
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would be.
Oh, great.
And it's an oversight on my part for not including that.
Okay, maybe you could tack that on in your communication with the board, too. But
I can do that.
Now, in the penalties, is it true that you're for debarking any culprits?
Owners?
It need be. What has happened in the past is that I, in particular, would go and speak to the people involved. I would do it twice. The third time, I would file a complaint. An officer would show up and typically give a warning. If that didn't work, the officer would show up and issue a citation. Worst case scenario, and this happened twice, was the animal was removed.
Really?
Not by me.
Was it euthanized or just removed?
It was removed. I don't know what happened afterwards.
But yeah.
They're just, we try to resolve these things locally and in person. But a lot of times the people get belligerent.
Yeah.
What's the cost of the citation, do you know?
Excuse me?
Cost of the citation, do you know what that is?
I don't. It's a Class C citation, I believe. I don't know what the consequence is.
God, it'd be nice if one of the penalties would require behavior modification of any offending canine.
Whatever it takes to make them quiet. We've got another situation that just developed in the neighborhood.
Really? With a dog and all?
Yes.
Oh, I'm sorry to hear that. You know, I mean, they have their own psyches, you know.
Yes, they do.
you know.
And I've been a dog owner in the past, I'm not now, I have a cat. But I used to own dogs, and so I know that there can be a challenge sometimes, but when you're in an urban environment, you've got to maintain the peace.
Especially at 3 in the morning, you know, but you, yeah, if it's repeated. Well, so...
Is this citation something that a person could challenge?
Well, that's what...
And go to?
Yes, and, well, you can challenge any...
You see the last sentence in Multnomah County thing?
Affirmative defense, so there must be a way to make defense.
Well, yeah, if a squirrel was, or a cat, your cat was taunting him on the fence, and, you know, just licking his chops, and the dog goes berserk, you know, then you'll get a ticket. Well, anyway, appreciate this, Jerry. We should really look at this and contemplate it in the next month to see if there's any unforeseen, you know, implications.
Chair, that's always my reaction to something is to not jump into it, but take some time to play it out in your mind for the unintended consequences that always seem to happen.
But I do know what you're talking about, and especially if you have uncooperative humans who might visit you in if they've been fined and stuff like that, you don't need that either. With your Smith & Wesson, yeah. So, okay, we're going to put this on the agenda for next month. You're welcome to come, and we'll vote on it. We'll vote on it. And thanks for bringing this to our attention.
Yeah, and Mr. Chairman, I have no problem with adding that other clause that you wanted to add. It's a good idea.
Oh, good. Well, thank you. Thanks for your legwork on this. It's kind of interesting.
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman and committee members.
Right.
I'm on a short leash today, so I'm going to have to bail. Appreciate your consideration.
You bet. You bet. I appreciate your letters, too. I don't always agree with them, but I think you really are positive in sharing your views.
Well, my politics tend to be a bit to the right of the general population here. So.
Well, no, but that's great. I mean, you know, that you share your views.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Take care. Okay, so... Let's see who's next on the lineup. Molly, okay?
Yeah, I just wanted to kind of make a general statement. I know when I've come here, I've really pushed for a pretty much full-time trainer at Greenhill, and I still feel that way, but we do have someone working with the dogs for 10 hours a month, which isn't a whole lot, but I think it is helping. And so I'm gonna kind of stop pushing for that right now. I do hope, and I know money's tight because they're trying to get that new building up, and I think the new building is gonna be just really crucial in helping these dogs to settle and be less stressed. It's just gonna really be a big help. So to me, the building is really worth it, and if for that reason we have to maybe put a full-time trainer or a larger hourly part-time trainer aside, I understand. I do hope when things have settled down and the building's up and maybe we're not spending quite as much money on that again, we will consider a trainer for more hours than we have now, a real trainer. I think we have to keep in mind the dogs that we bring in, which are the street guys and the surrender dogs as well, and a lot of them are just fine. Most of them probably are pretty adoptable up front, but the ones who aren't. And so I'm just hoping that it's something that will stay on the radar, so that we can really get somebody in who can help us. Right now, the whole thing, it's not that bad, and right now we don't have that many dogs. But I still think the bulk of the training has been left to dog walkers, even though there's this person there to help us. It's still kind of on our shoulders, and I don't feel competent to do it. I'm not a dog trainer, and so... I think it's okay for now, and I'm not going to bring it up anymore until later. because I think Laurel, who's there, has really, she's a big help, and she's helped me out. She's the trainer.
She comes 2.5 hours a week?
She comes 10 hours a month.
Which is 2.5 hours a week.
Oh, yeah, 2.5 hours, sorry, yeah.
Well, that's totally inadequate.
Well...
The Lane County Ordinance, it says save adoptable and treatable animals, and we've been grappling with this thing for 10 years. And when Lane County had the contract, we did have a behaviors. We funded it. The budget committee funded it. And, you know, there's a revenue stream that Green Hill has for building their constructions, and they have an operating revenue stream. And so I'm not sure that the two things are, you know, incompatible.
Well, maybe not. I thought you said that it was more
a problem of finding the right person who's willing to do it affordably or something. What's the situation there?
I agree with your statement. We have an operational budget, and we have a construction or capital campaign budget, and those two are very separate. And so the training resources, as payroll and veterinary staff, all comes out of the operational budget.
Right.
So they're running side by side, but they are intertwined.
They didn't know it.
Right. I think in terms of looking at part-time versus full-time and making that decision, it is a combination of factors. Some of it is finding the right fit. Some of it is the influx of dogs that we have and how many out of the entire population need this designated care. Laurel is Karen Pryor certified, so that's a nationally accredited behavior certification.
It's called Karen Pryor?
It's called the Karen Pryor Academy.
Huh.
Karen with a K.
Wow.
And so she has the experience and the education to back up the work that she's doing. And as with, I would say, all of our programs at Green Hill, we really look at trying to have the correct people in place, but then also to train and then train. And so we do have layers of dog walkers who are volunteers that are also have stepped up to a volunteer training capacity, and just trying to make sure that we're educating both the staff and the volunteers as much as possible to have a continuous level of consistent training.
So you
and this isn't really part of this conversation, but I feel compelled to say what I'd like to see on the training level is the next step is training with adopters so that the adopters are informed about the animals and given some skills so that those dogs don't bounce back.
Absolutely. One of Laurel's responsibilities is some of the dogs that have been identified as our more challenging cases or that have exhibited behaviors within the shelter that we find may be challenging for adopters to manage both in their home and then when they're out engaging with the rest of the public. She's doing follow-up calls in addition to the traditional follow-up calls that we pursue with all of our adopters. Laurel is following up in terms of specific behavior adjustments, traveling from the shelter into a home, and really, like you said, trying to support the adopter in a more progressive way.
That's good.
Well before it gets to the point where they're feeling overwhelmed or they've had an incident and now that animal comes back to us. We're always committed to that animal for its life, but we would much rather head that off well in advance.
Could you possibly give her 20 hours a month rather than 10?
Not at this time.
Why is that?
I just reviewed our fiscal year payroll budget, and okay. We're halfway through, and we're right on track for where we need to be to hit our budget through June 30th. We're also looking at, as we combine the two shelters, having 7-day-a-week coverage.
Yeah.
And so we're looking at ramping up some of our animal care staff positions. And also, last year, July 1st, when minimum wage increased by 50 cents, that was a $40,000 increase overnight for our staff. We're looking at experiencing that again this coming July 1st, as well as the following July 1st with the continued raise of minimum wage, since a majority of our staff members are hovering right around that minimum wage.
Who is the really nice, Jen Biglin, yeah. Does she help you at all?
She does, yeah. Jen Biglin and Tara at Training Spa are very helpful, both in coming out to supplement training for our staff, as well as being a resource for shelter dogs within our care, and primarily for that next level support that adopters will need once they're taking an animal home.
We understand.
Thank you.
So, Katie James?
Oh, I'm sorry.
You have to talk.
Okay. Well, can I ask a question?
Absolutely.
Okay. So my question is, Laurel, going to the adopters that have adopted challenging dogs, does she charge for that through Green Hill, or how does that work? Or does she do it on a volunteer basis?
It's a phone call. It's a phone call, and then she's determining the level that dog would need.
Oh, okay.
Once the dog is adopted into a home, it's the financial responsibility of the adopter to provide any sort of behavioral or medical care, and that's part of the contract that they sign. But certainly dogs that need additional behavioral care while they're in the shelter, we previously have contracted out with Laurel. She now comes to the shelter. We also contract out with Michaela Frank, who works with Jen Bigland at Training Spot, and she'll do some one-on-one dog consultations, both to assess the dog behavior and then to set forward a plan.
Their business is called Training Spot?
Jen and Tara opened a business called Training Spot. It's down on...
Training Spot or Spa?
Training Spot, S-P-O-T.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
Close to the...
She used to be, she was a member here.
Close to the park under the bridges.
Cool. Well, any other comments or?
Did you just think you were signing in, that you were here?
Well, that sometime in the future, I didn't realize you were signing in to speak with a specific issue.
Janetta, do you have anything to alert us?
Not at the moment.
Okay, so we'll move forward. Nothing, no changes to the agenda, I presume?
No.
Review or approve the audio minutes? Does anyone want to make a motion on that?
I would move that we do.
I second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion's adopted. Vacancy update?
So it was the CVC vet indicated that their vet on staff, Dr. Baird, I think is her name, may be interested in filling the vacancy for LCAS. I reached out to her a couple times, have not received any word back, so I'll follow with her again just to see if she still has some interest. If not, then I will go to the open posting for the vacancy.
What is that, Center for Veterinary Care?
It's the... Community Veterinary Center. They're on Highway 99.
Yeah, they work with St. Vincent de Paul. Mm-hmm. Have you met or talked to her, this lady?
No, I have not.
How did you know she was interested?
So CVC, the admin person, Cheryl, that she has come before this board before, she indicated that Dr. Baird may be interested in that.
Huh. Well, that's great. Mm-hmm. And that would be Commissioner Farr's appointment, or that would be an at-large one?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that'd be good. Thank you for working on that one. And, okay, continuing business, Harriet Smith Trust summary, CVC needs request.
So
she might have a conflict of interest, but she could recuse herself.
So on the second page of your packet is a summary of the Harriet Smith Trust. So the top piece... Scott, you're probably familiar with that budget report from the county. But that is actually what is reflected on the books right now. So that shows what the budget is, and that is the trust itself, and then our identified expenses. So at the very bottom, where I have a summary, that gives you the summary of what the actual projects or items are that you've approved for expenditure of the funds. So... the $23,275 that is within your expense budget. It has not been spent yet.
Oh.
And that was the amount that was identified for the specialized trainer hours and training supplies for First Avenue.
Huh. How much does 10 hours a month cost?
$500.
Let's put that on our agenda for next month. And we could help double that for you.
And the training supplies are the break the boredom kind of stuff for the animals.
It was just specialized training equipment. I'm not quite sure what all that was, but we identified a certain amount for that. Mm-hmm. Not just training a trainer, but also training supplies as needed. And we would...
Was there talk about closing First Avenue when Green Hill got finished with their project?
Yes, apparently.
And that will happen.
I don't know about the city spayed and neutered clinic.
I think that's an unknown for us, the long-term future.
When does Green Hill plan to finish? 2020 or something?
We expect to vacate the First Avenue shelter location by July 1st of this year.
Of this year, wow, okay. So many training... First Avenue.
The what?
For any training money for First Avenue folks by July won't be effective, really, right?
Well, Lane County contracts.
Will that money go to then Green Hill?
It could. I mean, oh, no, not this whole thing. No.
No, no.
We'll not let that happen.
Trainer services? Well, that's a person to train the animals. Mm-hmm. So that person.
Mm-hmm. What about court holds? When someone's dog gets confiscated or they go to jail and you have these dogs, do some of them have behavioral issues?
Quite often.
And does Laurel work with them?
Yeah, it depends on the dog and it depends on what capacity they come to us for. If they their owner gets arrested, a DUI, and the dog's in the car, then they come in as part of our crisis care program. And they're within that same stray hold restriction. So 5 business days, we are sending a letter to the jail. We're trying to communicate with anybody else here locally or beyond that would be able to come and pick up that dog and take responsibility for that dog if the owner is suspected to stay in jail for longer. And we try to work with each individual owner on a case-by-case basis. So sometimes if they say, well, I'm scheduled to get out in a week or 2 weeks, can you hold on to my dog? We can do that. Sometimes they say, I'm in here for the next 6 months and I don't have anybody to take care of my dog. Can I surrender it to you? And then will you find it a new home? There are other situations in court cases where we're taking care of the animal because there's been an investigation, suspected abuse or mm-hmm. neglect. And so there, depending on the case, we're either sheltering the dog and the dog still belongs to the owner, in which case there's a limited amount of care, medically necessary care and interaction that we can provide. Or if the stray hold is up or the dog's been surrendered to us, then there's a little bit more flexibility with the level of engagement we're allowed.
What was that first thing? I didn't track you. Just the first thing you only give a little bit of, what was it?
It depends on ownership of the animal. So within the first, 3 to 5 days that an owned animal is in our care, they're under a stray hold. And so they still get the same level of exercise and safe shelter and feeding that all of the animals do, but the level of engagement sometimes can be a little bit less because the liability is higher because they're not ours to care for, if that makes sense. They're not our property. Once that stray hold is up or once the dog has been surrendered to us, then we recognize that we have a little bit more wiggle room, both to provide behavioral care as well as medical care, if that's necessary. But I think in answer to your first question, oftentimes animals that come to us, if their owner has been incarcerated, or sometimes if they've been hospitalized, they may have less socialization skills or...
If the dog's been hospitalized?
If the owner's been hospitalized and it comes to us as opposed to a friend or family taking care of the animal, oftentimes that means that that person maybe has less of a social support network, in which case that animal has seen less people, less other animals, and can have a more stressful time in a shelter environment.
Thanks. Well, we'll consider that to help. Where are we here? The CVC needs request?
So, following the Harriet's Smith summary was something that I passed out at a previous meeting, and it just outlines the request that the community vet center came to this board requesting financial assistance.
And the biggest piece of that was an autoclave, correct?
Well, the biggest piece was the x-ray equipment. So it would be up to the board to discuss if they wanted to help satisfy funds towards an x-ray machine or towards any of the other items. And I think when I talked to Cheryl, these were in a priority order. So, you know, those were the top three that they had. Cheryl is the admin, or the probably the clinic director.
How many dogs do they see a month?
I do not know that.
They see a lot?
She gave those numbers when she appeared before us, and that was a bunch.
How much is the x-ray thing?
$32,000.
Your next page.
What's a tono pen?
I think it was to check eyes.
And an autoclave? Is that clean something? Is that sterilized?
Yeah, that's a sterilizer for equipment.
Now, an x-ray machine, I can't remember if she said that they have an agreement with the local veterinarians that think if they need an x-ray, they can go.
As I remember, they do, but the x-ray machines in the area are pretty well used, and I don't think that one of the issues is that they have an animal in their building that needing an x-ray may not be real amenable to traveling to where the x-ray
is. Did they reopen in October 2018?
Yes. They were closed and they reopened.
For the most part, they're homeless animals, or they're homeless people with animals.
Yes.
Correct.
Not entirely. It's income-based. Mm-hmm. So it's low income also.
If this CVC, if they have a history of going in and out of business and we donated something to them, what would happen to that expensive equipment?
You could stipulate it goes back to the county.
You could. We could have an understanding, a memorandum of understanding with them that if their business untoward happens, that it would revert back.
That would only be if we bought the whole thing, though. If we just contributed to it, we wouldn't say.
Right.
So it's my understanding that they've actually been part of the community for about 15 years. So I think they've had some blips in time where they weren't active, but for the most part, I believe that they have.
Is this the one Diana Huntington started? Do you know her?
I know her, I'm not sure.
Early on, like in the early 2000s? I think so. Well, the 32,000 is a bit large, but we certainly can do something for them. All right.
Well, I would like to know, and maybe we can talk to them more about it.
Yeah.
I wanted to go by and look at their facility. They never got there yet, but...
I did too.
Yeah.
Field trip.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, let's do it.
What are you guys going to do it then?
Let's go do a field trip. Yep.
And I can ask Cheryl to come back next meeting and make, you know, be available to answer questions or to give a presentation about what their really immediate needs are and where they are in their funding.
I don't know if this is in order of their...
I think it was.
The x-ray machine and...
Yeah, I think it was their order of preference.
Was it?
Yeah.
Because I was inclined for the auditorium.
I think they would be happy with anything that they could get.
Or we could do a matching thing up to 50% or something. That might be... No?
Excuse me, what?
That'd be one thing we could think of, a $16,000 match contingent on their raising the money.
Yeah, I would still have a concern about what happens to the equipment if...
Yes. Well, they've been around for a long time, but I understand.
Yeah.
Well, you'd want to know from Cheryl, how long have they been inoperative? If it's just 3 months, I know what you're saying.
Yeah.
It's a tough...
It is.
Okay. Our committee goals are right here, beautifully summarized.
Right, and the reason I brought this up, because now we are in 2019, we need to identify your goals for 2019, if any of these...
Well, I think we should just clone these and not fuss with it.
Yeah, that's fine.
Are you amenable to that?
One of the things that we had talked about was that it, a desire amongst many of us to have more identifiable goals, where you could tick it off and say that's been done, rather than monitor and encourage and support and all of those good things that you do, but
well, we,
to be more specific about it as raise license compliance by fill in the blank percent or something that we could monitor for ourselves that we've actually made an impact.
We've talked before about prioritizing all of these goals, because you have quite a few goals here. Prioritizing them and identifying the ones that you feel like you would like to focus on the most, and then identifying tangible outcomes and tasks for each goal, and working, you know, on that through the year. But it would take some scrutiny on your part to identify which do you feel like, you know, you would like to have them in order, and what do you feel like means a success for that goal.
Exactly.
Sounds good, theoretically.
It does sound good, theoretically.
So
it is hard to come up with.
If
it
there's
is.
Something tangible,
it is.
I mean, the license, is there really widespread compliance with the rabies vaccination reporting?
I believe that there is.
I bet.
I believe that there is.
Well, they're required by law,
yeah.
too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And does that translate to new licenses?
They generate new licenses.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
That was our hope. Mm-hmm. Do you identify the most productive veterinary, you know, practices versus perhaps the underperforming ones?
I don't think that we have a measure in place for that. We just require the vets to send us their monthly rabies reports, vaccinations, and they certainly report to us a number of licenses sold. So, but we don't have any kind
of... So they're selling county licenses, but not city licenses, apparently?
Some do.
Do they sell yeah. They sell city
but
licenses?
But they're not required to report their city licensing
right.
To mm-hmm. us, just their county ones.
Because I had heard that Pet Data, if they're still contracting with Pet Data, didn't want other people selling license. They wanted to control everything. But I don't know if that's true. It would be stupid if they did insist on that.
We don't use Pet Data.
No, I understand.
Yeah, so we don't know the statistics.
Did you read our report?
Not all the way.
Oh, yeah. But do it.
I will.
It's good.
I will.
A lot of it's been implemented, apropos mm-hmm. to what you're saying, and there's still some stuff. Well, you know what we were finding out when we were really into this was... There were practices like, well, we get a report of the veterinarian offices and how many rabies vaccination reports they gave or how many licenses they sold. And you could see, like, Westmoreland, that's a big practice. They'd have 2 or 3 a month. Well, that's nonsense. That's nonsense. I remember taking my dog there once, and there was, like, thousands of files. That was bull. And so... her name was Rochelle, I think. She worked at LCAS. And she would go and visit the vet offices and talk to the, maybe the business manager or something, and give the materials, you know. Is there anything we can do to help you on this? You know, this is obviously required. And, you know, we had talked also about increasing the compensation for new licenses at veterinarian offices as a motive. You hear Dr. Penfold, and he's always complaining about the burden and this and that and the other. Well, if we address that, what do we pay a vet for selling a license? $2 or
so? About maybe 30 seconds worth of staff time.
But is it a couple dollars, do you know?
$2.50.
$2.50. And a new license is what, $35?
Depends on how many years you get.
Yeah.
Between 18 and 42 or 84, like in some between.
I mean,
and
you know.
And I am always looking for a way to have a carrot instead of a stick. Mm-hmm. I would like it to be some way where we can encourage people without the stick. We've talked about beginner licenses, when start out with a free, your free 30-month trial or free
3-month trial,
90-day trial, or
you said 30-month.
Oh yeah, day, and then have it come due at that point.
And, Multnomah County does that.
Have them in the system and perhaps some additional education at that point about what this is doing for you and for the community and for your animal. I'd like people to want to have a license because it's a good thing.
It is, and we do have stuff on our website that talks about the benefits of licensing.
Free call home for a dog without a dime?
Yeah.
They, Multnomah County would, in lieu of an initial citation, they would give them a 60-day free license, but they had to provide the rabies vaccination thing and duly license themselves after a certain time. Maybe it's 3 months. I'm not sure. Multnomah County. That was really, I thought, a good thing. Mm-hmm. But you know, part of our problem is since we're disconnected from the city and all the animal control officers. I mean, how many officers do we have for Lane County that spot unlicensed dogs?
Well, we have 1.5 animal welfare officers who are busy all of the time, not able to address as much as they would like to. Our administrative staff is limited as well.
Right, right.
We have numerous occasions where we cannot provide the services that we would like just due to lack of staffing.
Didn't we add another staff person?
That
we
was added, the point five.
That was the point five.
Oh, that's
animal
just
welfare
for,
officer.
Oh, we didn't have anyone else in the office, right?
No. Rachel is a full-time dispatch position. We have a 1040 that concentrates on violations, and we have a 520 that helps out at the front desk, but the 520 is...
Who processes all the licenses and keeps all the records and everything and the revenue? And who does all that? You?
No, that would be like Rachel.
We all do it.
Yeah, and Sydney and Tina.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because you do a good job on that. Mm-hmm. That was our hope.
What did you start to say, the 520? What?
The 520 is 520 hours, mm-hmm. and they're limited to what we can ask them to do. You know, this is not a whole lot of time.
Well, raise license compliance, you know. Do we have any metric that's been updated to guesstimate what percentage of dogs living in Lane County and living in unincorporated Lane County are licensed?
Not that I'm aware.
You know, when we were really working on our report and we were really active, we proposed a pet food tax. And all hell broke loose, but it was a good idea. It was a great idea, and we had Echo Northwest, a think tank kind of thing here. They did a study on it. That must be in our files. Did you inherit files from Karen Gaffney for LCAS?
We have some older files, but I would say probably not all of them.
Really?
Yeah, because it was with parks. then came to
right.
my area. So
yeah.
Charlie may still have
well, with
some
with
of those
Human
files.
Services,
right?
I mean, after
right.
LCAS, yeah.
So Karen
used to
Gaffney,
be Management Services, Human
right.
Services.
Yeah, and then it came to Public Works from Health and Human Services.
It was a really good idea, and we had data that was a combination of census data and pet food industry data. And they can really calibrate pretty, they have to do it for their own bottom line. We had pretty good guesstimates, and Bill Fleener is a PhD in animal physiology, and he cranked this stuff out. So if you read our report, or you read the Echo Northwest one, there was $1 million of revenue. We could have had satellite animal facilities. It was a lot, it was really something transformative. And still out there. You know, what, a 1% tax on pet food? Would that kill anybody? Not too many people. Anyway. Okay, so we up here to our next agenda item.
Can we give ourselves homework of looking at these goals and coming back with some ideas?
That's
to
a good idea.
Great idea.
Sure. Any addendums to there? And so we'd like to clone the 2019 ones with the proviso that if there are any legitimate additional ones, we will bring them and discuss them in the next meeting. We'll discuss the CVC allocation request. If we can do so, and you know, is that cool?
At least us will go, and maybe everybody go.
Well, at least you two.
Yeah, you bet.
Okay.
And, okay. Green Hill activity.
Okay, so our December numbers look pretty comparable to December of 2017 numbers, although for Lane County, we, this time last year, we're still caring for some of the chihuahuas that had come out of the hoarding case, so the numbers are a couple dozen higher last year than, in 2017 than in 2018. But other than that, operations seem to be steady. We are continuing on our building project at the Green Hill location. The first building that will be completed is our stray hold area, which will also encompass our crisis care dogs, which are part of the animals that come through from animal welfare officers or police officers if somebody's been arrested or hospitalized. The second building will house dogs that are available for adoption and will feature a variety of different sizes and spaces where dogs can be housed separately or with their companions. In those two facilities, we'll also have a large indoor training space as well as an isolation area. And we're currently giving hard hat tours now that both of the roofs are on. So if you'd like to come out and visit, we'd be happy to show you through the construction site. And the foundation has been poured for the central core building and walls are expected to go up about the third week of January. That will house an expanded small animal area, some centralized storage, and our future medical clinic as well.
Wow.
We're working on expanding our cattery, which will extend through the current lobby and join the new foundation footprint. So we're on schedule for an end of spring, very beginning of summer, full transition and completion of the first phase of the building project.
What do you mean the first phase? If you have the first building, second building, and the central core building, what else you got?
The first phase is considered all of our dog housing facilities, the first and second buildings, as well as the cattery expansion. The second phase is our medical clinic.
What's the total price tag on that?
Going up every single day.
Is it 5 million?
5.6. And I apologize, I don't have the numbers broken down for in front of me for Lane County animals versus City of Eugene and City of Springfield, but in 2018, We cared for 3,458 animals, almost an even split, 1,712 cats, 1,561 dogs, and 185 other animals. We performed 2,821 surgeries through our medical clinic, and 1,118 of those were free TNR surgeries for spay and neutering cats in Lane County, community cats and feral cats.
How many
again?
1,118.
Do you have an x-ray machine?
We do not. We would love one. We go to VCA West Portland when we need one. We do plan on having one in our future medical clinic. I agree that it's absolutely essential to be able to identify what a root cause of is in an injured animal, especially if they come in and they're non-weight-bearing. Crucial to being able to diagnose appropriately and then provide the recommended care.
Is your construction taking into consideration a future x-ray machine for shielding and things like that?
Absolutely.
Great.
If we were to give Green Hill a x-ray machine for $32,000, could Green Hill allow CBC to use it?
Yes, 100%.
That's interesting.
Land is coming together here.
Well,
a potential plan is potentially coming.
Do you have any donors who could respond to a matching offer? Like if we match $16,000, do you think you could get that?
I do.
Well, that might be something. Let's put that on the agenda.
Okay.
We've had several matching campaigns over the course of the last few years, specifically towards the building project, and have had great success.
That's good. What do you spend a year with VCA Westmoreland on x-rays? $10,000?
Oh, gosh. You know, I don't feel comfortable answering that right now, but I can certainly do some research and get back to you. But
they would still have costs of doing the x-rays. Besides just having a machine there too,
the plates,
which would be part of what you know they're getting right now from Westmoreland.
When's the medical facility going to be finished?
July?
No, the medical facility could easily be a year to a couple years out.
Okay.
We're looking at about $1 million more to complete the interior of the medical facility. We'll have additional surgery space, recovery areas, and then we're looking at adding some machinery as well.
Could we move towards this matching deal on this x-ray equipment before your facility is finished?
Or before the medical portion of the facility?
Yeah.
You're still going to do medical stuff. You just don't know.
Oh,
absolutely.
You could use it.
You can use it now
as
opposed to waiting 2 years.
I would guess to the volume that you guys do versus others like CBC and whatever, is a $32,000 x-ray machine adequate for their purposes? I know there's lots and lots of variances on something like that.
There is a wide variance. I can do a little more research and get back to you on that.
Yeah. It would work. That would be a good deal as a resource. You know, one of the lingering questions that we have, or I have anyway, and a lot of people have, when we're going to get rid of a public shelter that's existed since 1978 and transfer it to a nonprofit in a way, although that's not indefinite necessarily, but more than likely for the foreseeable future, there is the question of distance from the central part of Lane County, Eugene Springfield. And Carrie had talked about you guys trying to provide complimentary transportation for people who don't have it or something, a van, or are you still working on that idea?
Absolutely. So we are hoping to work with LTD to get a bus stop out in front of the Green Hill location. Currently, the closest bus stop is on the corner of Green Hill Road and West 11.
Mm-hmm.
And if you've ever been on Green Hill Road, people drive extremely fast and there's no sidewalk, so it's not reasonable to ask members of the public, potential adopters, volunteers, anyone to utilize that bus stop on the corner and then to walk up to the shelter. So we're hoping to get a LTD stop added right in front of the Green Hill location.
Now, you've been working on that for a year. What's the progress of that?
I would have to check. I've deferred it to a committee, so I can get an update. Also, with the addition of Uber and Lyft in town, we're hoping to work with some of the private contractors to be able to transport people in their pets.
Would LTD allow dogs that are not service dogs to go in there?
No.
So that's a real issue.
Yeah. In carriers, do they?
No. Not currently. We have not given up yet, but not currently.
You know, about when was it? Last spring or something. I was coming back from Churchill High School on 18th, and I saw this dog. I don't know if you remember it. I forget the name of the dog. Charlie or something. Beautiful dog. And it was running right in the middle of rush hour, right on 18th, dodging cars. And I opened the window, and there's a woman walking across the street. I go, what the hell? And so I turned right to see if I could get the dog. And then there was a great guy who had a landscaping business, kind of hippie, nice guy. And then the lady came. And so, you know, I said, hey, well, we got to make sure it's microchipped. We got to bring it in. She said, I'll take care of it. So anyway, she brought it to First Avenue. And within, you know, an hour or so, it was claimed. Well, that was a benefit for First Avenue being there. That's one of the things that, had you ever thought long-term of having some small satellite?
That would be an absolute dream of ours, and we have discussed that. I don't see that we'll have an ability to commit to that anywhere in the near future, but I do absolutely agree that there is a need for that in the community, and whether the satellite is in downtown Eugene or in conjunction with another.
What about First Avenue?
It's not suitable for animal care.
Really?
It's just really not. It's crumbling. And
really?
Part of the reason that we're moving our operations out of it is because it's what we know now about what animals need while they're in a shelter environment, and the services that we provide in terms of really being committed to a life-saving mission. Never putting a time limit on how long an animal can stay with us, never euthanizing for space.
That's right.
Very, very different than when that shelter was built. Mm-hmm. That shelter was built for a 3-day stay hold, and that's it.
That's exactly right. We put an end to a lot of that stuff.
Yes, we did.
But I know of one dog that was, oh my God, just euthanized for space. And then the caretaker, the people are in Europe, and the caretaker rushes in on Tuesday and says, I take care of this dog. I didn't know about First Avenue. I went to, do you have it? And they euthanized it. And it had fleas. And it was a beautiful dog. And it really offended me. You know, and Carrie said that when the county had the contract via the sheriff's office, 20,000 animals a year were euthanized.
I believe that. We've come leaps and bounds as a community and in the way that we demand better care for the animals, the most vulnerable community members that we have.
We just don't want treatable or savable animals to be euthanized.
And we are getting there.
All right.
We're here in this community. We're here.
Anything else?
No, thank you.
Sure. Thank you for being here and helping us and always coming. Lane County Animal Service activity. Did we already discuss it? Or?
No, I'm just looking. I didn't see anything out of the ordinary.
Okay.
Rachel, did you see anything kind of spiking? I didn't really see anything.
No.
Business as usual.
So,
go
ahead. Sorry. Oh, yeah.
I'd just like to mention on the spay-neuter vouchers, something I just barely did, but we've got copies of the vouchers and the flyer that goes with it. And of course, it's for unincorporated Lane County. So I took both the vouchers and the flyer out to Dorena to the post office out there, which is 12 miles out of town, very rural, low income.
Good for you.
And I want to get them to Lorraine, and I'm thinking perhaps that might be something to do to other rural areas.
Like Walton.
If you put it in a post office or in a little community grocery store.
It's a good idea.
That's where the people are going to see it.
It's a good idea, Jenna.
And whether it's going to bear fruit, it does not appear that it has, because in December you did 8 cats and 3 dogs. But then I just barely got it out there, too. So if people start utilizing them, it's not going to show up until the next couple of months. But I want to get them out to Lorraine, but I'm thinking other areas, that might be one way of getting the word out into the community. Because in your rural areas, if there's a little post office and a little grocery store, that's where the people go.
Sure. Fall Creek, stuff like that. The, well that, no, Lowell. Fall Creek used to have that market there in the corner. The 8 vouchers. We had really hoped this would make an impact. This CVC, are they using the vouchers?
I don't think so.
They are just now starting to do spay-neuter. They did get a spay-neuter grant.
Okay.
And I know they had been funneling them to WAG. So I don't know how that's working, but they've just started now with the spay-neuter.
Is WAG using our vouchers?
Oh, yes. They use it probably the most.
A lot. WAG and CVC were kind of complementary.
Yes.
We had a lot of, did we have a lot of unused money last, at the end of the fiscal year?
There was probably some. There's not a distinct line item for us to actually look at. It's usually a percentage of licensing revenue is what is set
5%.
Aside. Right.
But that's a hard dollar figure. And as I understand, you roll it over to the next fiscal year, so it still stays in that general discretionary.
It's always going to be like the 5% of licensing revenue is what it's going to be. So are you asking, is it rolled over, specifically earmarked?
Well,
it's not really done like that through the budget process.
So at the end of the fiscal year, remaining money just evaporates?
No, it goes into their general discretionary budget, maybe?
Well, that's
do you retain it? Do you retain the money from licensing that isn't expended, the 5% that isn't used?
I'm trying to think of how that budget
I mean, if
works.
There's $7,000 that could be used for vouchers that isn't, out of $14,000 or whatever, and the fiscal year comes up. I thought, someone told me that it's rolled over.
I'd have to check
it's
on
retained
that.
By LCAS. Or,
I'd have to check on that, Chair. I'm not familiar with that being held in a specific pot identified as for the voucher program.
I'd be interested in knowing.
Okay. Let me bring that back to you.
Do you, is anyone else have a question? What kind of contact do we have with the City of Eugene Animal Services Program? Do you have a counterpart there that you talk with or keep in touch with? Or
Molly Monette, but she's, I don't think she works there anymore, actually.
Yeah, she accepted a new position, and I know that our animal welfare officer, you know, Bernie, I know he has a lot of ongoing discussions with Ted Carlson, so I mean, there is a, you know, I would say there's contact between the two jurisdictions.
Because it'd be interesting to know what they're doing on licensing, what they're doing on spay and neuter vouchers. When we adopted, the county adopted the spay and neuter voucher policy, we had, I forget her name now, but it's on our task force report. She was a city administrator of some sort, and really nice person, Carol something Pomies or something. Anyway, she got the city council to adopt the same thing, George Poling, the commissioner. So they had a 5% policy, but then they made sure that, I guess their spay and neuter thing, this office controlled that. It'd be interesting to know just once or twice a year if they still do these things. And whether they're going to stay there after Greenhill leaves.
Well, we could certainly check in with the city just to ask them those questions.
There was an effort. Do you remember that, Janetta, when the city tried to get rid of the spay-neuter clinic. Remember that? It was like 2005, and all hell broke loose. And they filled the city council chambers, and Bonnie Bettman. I mean, all hell broke loose. But, you know, nature abhors a vacuum in a way that I'm concerned that this will just disappear. You know, do you have any notion about that?
We met with the clinic manager and a representative from the city a few months ago now. And my takeaway from that meeting was that their services would continue and that they were looking to identify whether it would make sense to stay in that location and to expand into the areas that we're vacating, or if it would make more sense based on other available real estate to move the operations someplace else. Mm-hmm. But that the services that they provide, I believe everyone's in agreement that they should continue.
Good. Great. Well, we've had an open discussion. We've talked about items for next month's agenda. Is there any reason we want to extenuate this meeting for another hour? That being said,
I move to adjourn.
Is there a second?
Second.
All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, nay. Motion is agreed to.